Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Matt Kinnear and Ty Zanders as we talk about what was a really jam-packed week of lacrosse news that we are still digesting. So we're going to talk about all of the big headlines as well as look ahead. This isn't a season preview, but the season is not too far away, so there will be a component of season preview type content. So first things first, Matt and Ty, thanks so much for joining me. How you guys doing?
Yeah. I think it's always a weird day, kind of when you transition out of the last full day watching football on our couches and into lacrosse season. I think as we just mentioned, it appears as though we have Division I lacrosse this week, knock on wood. Definitely exciting in our world and anybody who's a fan of lacrosse.
Matt, you getting jacked up?
Terry, you mentioned, remember last time we did one of these podcasts, we talked about schedule updates. I think we were talking about like April start date, and now we're sitting here and it's January, late January, and we're 4 days, 5 days away from lacrosse. So how the world has changed.
No question. That being said, there are aspects of the absence of lacrosse that are unfortunately the place that we are going to begin. The biggest story on InsideLacrosse.com as far as breaking news is concerned last week was T.D. Erland, the Yale faceoff specialist, entering the NCAA transfer portal. Erland started his career at the University of Albany and played two seasons, including being part of the Great Danes Final Four team in 2018, and then that summer made the transition to Yale, where he was a part of the Bulldogs' run to the NCAA championship in 2019. Like every other senior last year, he was awarded an additional year of eligibility. However, unlike the other Yale seniors, because he had not completed eight semesters, he was able to return. However, with the dwindling prospects, or at least increased concern or doubt around the prospect of a 2021 Ivy League season, Erland told Utah that he is entering the transfer portal in order to develop a backup plan. What were your thoughts on this news, and can you tell us anything more about your conversation with TD?
Yeah, I think it was one of those things that was shocking and also not shocking. I think that a lot of people are very discouraged by just the lack of activity, by the Ivy League and having 10 months to come up with a plan or return to play and that not really, being something they're prioritizing. So, when that news popped up and TD and I had a conversation and word started to trickle out, I think it was definitely shocking, but it was one of those things that made sense. I mean, to have a couple of years of your college lacrosse career robbed from you is not something that any competitor such as TD would want to, deal with. I think he wants to cement his legacy and there's no doubt that just, and he made it clear and that he wanted it to beat Yale. He wants to beat Yale. It just doesn't seem like that's possible. So, I think we're still looking for clarity in terms of what he's going to be, what's next for him and what is feasible given the timing. Here we are recording this January 25th. And Denver, a destination that has popped up most frequently, tentatively has a game on Saturday against Utah. So, Sarah, you can kind of, talk about your understanding of his situation and the likelihood of him suiting up for somebody else in 2021. But definitely a wild story. And I think one that makes sense. And as we alluded to in the story, could very well create a domino effect of other Ivy League seniors entering their names in the portal. But the timing is tough.
Yeah, I think Erland has the advantage of a number of different pathways to graduation that might not necessarily be available to every other current senior, particularly given the fact that he's the only one that is, a fifth year in that sense, given that the Ivy League seniors weren't able to come back from last year. So I think that that's going to be a potential hindrance towards seeing other current Ivy League seniors enter the transfer portal. That being said, there's definitely bears watching. We've seen it happen on the women's side as well. So, I mean, there's no question that there's a domino effect, but there's also the prospect of this being attention grabbing toward this issue of will the Ivy League play this spring or won't they? the Brown men's and women's lacrosse teams created a change.org petition in order to call attention to this. U.S. Lacrosse Magazine posted a letter from a couple of prominent Ivy League athlete alums calling on the Ivy League to reconsider their most recent statement that Inside Lacrosse posted about 10 days ago that essentially was a non-update update. Matt, you followed this story pretty closely. What can you add?
Yeah, you know, a big thing that's driving this is campus policies. You know, the Ivy League for, you know, I think maybe where the Ivy League has kind of gone wrong is maybe not giving a clear enough picture to the student athletes that this is going to be a really tough road to hoe in order to get back to a place where we feel comfortable allowing people on campus, allowing athletics to occur. You know, they've kind of kicked the can down the road, so to speak, and say, we're going to hope the numbers get better. We're going to hope the numbers get better. But with no hope of that happening, time is just definitely running out. And Terry, to go a step further, you know, the Ivy League isn't the only place this is happening. We're talking about schedules. We're talking about a lot of stuff. And, you know, in the D3 world, the NESCAC, you know, the similar academic standards, the similar kind of focus on academics that conference has, there's nothing been announced about the NESCAC yet. There's nothing been announced about the Centennial Conference yet. You know, that also has some schools that are that kind of high academic liberal arts schools. So, you know, these conferences, these individual institutions, I think there's going to be tough decisions about whether, you know, whether it's the Ivy, NESCAC, or Centennial, whether schools kind of want to follow along with the league or do their own thing, you know, which has been something that's rumored. And particularly I've heard that with some Centennial schools, that might be an approach that a few schools take there. Do something outside the box. And something I've heard with the NESCAC is that, you know, maybe there's kind of a bubble scenario that they can do and then play a season over a few weeks or something like that. So people are going to have to get really creative if they want something to get going here because, you know, we're almost getting to February. You know, obviously you can push it as much as possible, but academic things get in the way, not get in the way, but academic calendars kind of get in the way and decisions have to be made for these student athletes. And that time is now.
Ty, you mentioned the prospect of TD ending up at Denver. And one of the things that is undeniable about the role he plays in this conversation is that he is not just the best faceoff man in college lacrosse, but probably the best faceoff specialist in college lacrosse history. And his move would shift the balance of power in terms of who are the likely contenders for a national championship. And that is compounded by the fact that this past summer, the NCAA Rules Committee changed the rules of the faceoff, and it's really uncertain as to how it's going to play out, given that faceoff guys can no longer set up with their knee down or with their hands in the moto grip posture. They have to be in what's called or referred to as the standing neutral grip. So when you think about what TD Erland suiting up for another team, be it the Pioneers or any other, means toward who you would pick to win the 2021 national championship, what comes to mind?
I mean, it definitely changes things. I think, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking about, oh yeah, I mean, TD is to me the best faceoff specialist of all time. But I mean, if he goes to Denver, that's obviously, it's got to be the best faceoff unit of all time. I mean, there's three guys that have been starters. And, you know, two names that I seldom, you know, butcher, and Brett Bowes and Alex Sathakis. I mean, both those kids are excellent. So, you know, TD joining the fray there would certainly change things. I already kind of felt like Denver, I think, you know, a couple of us felt like Denver was a top four, top five caliber team. This kind of shoots them up there if that were to happen. I think that's pretty hard to deny. And just look at their schedule, you know, just looking at what they'd be able to do. Having just an embarrassment of riches, I think it's pretty exciting just to consider that you know, this is someone that could potentially be added to an already stacked lineup. I mean, having three very, you know, prominent players from Yale's 2020 team, you know, definitely stands out in my mind. You know, with TD potentially joining Lucas Kotler and Jackson Morrill. So if there's no Ivy League lacrosse this spring, I would imagine a lot of Bulldog fans will. I'll be rooting for the Pios.
Yeah, there's an interesting dynamic there, given how long they rooted against Coach Tierney when he was at Princeton. But I mean, the point you made is well taken. Denver finished the season in 2020 ranked number 10 in team faceoff win percentage. So it's not as if they are the contender that is most in need of Erlen's services. But one factor people have wondered, how is this feasible? How is this possible at this point in the season? And the transfer rules have changed. They had changed prior to the pandemic, and they have changed in accordance with the NCAA's response to COVID-19. But even in that instance, one of the important factors for Denver is that being on their quarter or trimester system, they have essentially a term that begins in mid-March. And eligibility corresponds to being eligible at the start of a term. You have to be enrolled at the start of a term. And so while some terms that would typically start in earlier mid-January have been postponed as universities from an academic standpoint have adjusted to the pandemic, Denver's calendar has remained pretty much static. So there are a handful of potential landing spots for Erlen should he choose to leave Yale, and Denver is one that isn't reliant upon something being different with their academic calendar because of this unusual year. The ability to arrive and potentially be immediately eligible in mid-March is something that theoretically could have happened at any time. But for all of the intrigue around Erlen and potentially any other Ivy League seniors' decision to move on, whether or not the league will play this spring, and the knock-on effects of the NESCAC and the Centennial, it was far from the only news that we had on InsideLacrosse.com this past week. On Saturday, we reported that Stephen Rafus, a senior at Syracuse who's played attack and midfield during his time at the Orange, intended to withdraw from the transfer portal, which he entered on December 22nd, as the result of a positive outcome to a disciplinary appeal that we reported in December was surrounding the potential violation of COVID-19 protocols. There's some elements to the story that we can add to in this format that, you know, might not necessarily have been as appropriate in the print stories, but, you know, first things first, Ty, this is a really big deal. What can you shed light on in terms of why this story was bigger than it might have immediately appeared?
I mean, to me, it was something that, as we heard the rumors, and those rumors kind of really just were starting to get out there in mid to late December, just a few days before Christmas, it had the potential to just disrupt what's arguably the most impressive, the best Syracuse team on paper, in a decade or so. So when you heard the rumors about, you know, Rafus, who was the most solid name that we heard, and then some other players that are game changing, middies in particular, and I think some faceoff guys were involved. It was just, it really felt like everything, was, it felt like this was Syracuse's year, and that could be interrupted by this off the field issue. So to kind of have that story get out there that everything is going to be fine and they'll get to play and just work it out. And I think it's pretty huge for Syracuse, to say the least, and maybe to go under the radar a little bit, knowing that it was a Friday or Saturday. But this is huge, I think, just for Syracuse to move forward and, move past this and hopefully they continue to stay disciplined, on and off the field. But, I mean, it really had the potential to just disrupt a team that we all can't wait to watch.
Yeah, I think to put it a little bit even more plainly, like the potential risk that we were told is five or six contributors in addition to Rafus, and like you said, largely from the midfield, had the potential to be suspended for the season as a result of an incident early in the fall, which I feel comfortable saying, by virtue of the fact that this disciplinary hearing ended up with a positive outcome, was a situation where a couple of housing units, I don't know whether they're apartments or whatever, basically kind of had a common space, and residents of two of the units ended up being kind of discovered by, I assume, a campus police officer just kind of hanging out in a common area. So basically 6, 7, 8 players, whatever the number of players and potential non-players was that exceeded their protocols, the That was the violation. So it wasn't as if it was a party. It wasn't an off-campus incident, which was an important factor in the way in which these players and their families kind of made the argument for why a semester-long suspension would be an overreaction, and the prospect of what it would mean for their on-field squad was really meaningful. Rafus, in the way that Erlen represents something of a symbol, was kind of a symbol for this situation because, as to my knowledge, the lone senior, he was a little bit more invested in finding a place to play this spring should the outcome come negative, and that is why he decided to enter the transfer portal. So it became the most hard and fast fact that was kind of in the public sphere, and ultimately why, you know, he was the source around which the story kind of operated. That being said, the process isn't fully complete. It's expected that the necessary steps that will be taken are going to be completed soon, and that is the point at which Rafus would withdraw from the portal. As of the time of this recording, he remains in. So a story that I suppose is 99% complete, but still has a little bit of certainty or finality to come. Matt, what was your reaction when you were in the loop on our reporting for this story?
Yeah, Terry, it's funny because while you're talking about all this, and Ty is absolutely right, this was enormous in terms of this, the scale of this, because of the amount of talent that Syracuse has, and you know, some of the names and just the sheer volume of numbers of people that it might have involved, or like at least was rumored to have involved early on in reporting the story. So it would have, you know, been huge for Syracuse. But this is kind of stuff that's, you know, it's kind of happening all across the country in some ways. You know, we've heard of other teams that maybe have had, you know, there's been rumors of suspensions or players being sat in practice because of breaking COVID protocols. You know, however you want to call it, whether it's having a party or just having a gathering or doing something that, you know, you're advised not to do. So this is going to be kind of, this story in general, kind of in the broader outside of Syracuse, is not going to go away, because these are kids, you know, these are 18 to 22 year olds. It can be very isolating, and not being able to go down the hall to your friend or, you know, gather and watch Monday Night Football or whatever it is, it's going to be really hard. So we're going to see a lot of situations like this. Syracuse obviously has a lot more eyes on it than any other team in the country. Rafus had to make the decision to go into the portal. So that's kind of why it's been kind of played out in the public sphere. And obviously the decimating factor those players would have had on their season made it a bigger story. But, you know, this is something to kind of watch. And, you know, I think there'll be some evaluation of policies, what was effective, what wasn't, what was right for the kids, what wasn't, you know, in the coming years. But, you know, these COVID protocols are going to be huge going forward, and it's going to be kind of a strength of will to get through an entire season if you're one of these student athletes and if you're a coach having to manage this. It's just going to be a persistent thing that we're talking about all year.
And a big part of the sacrifices that are necessary in order to comply with COVID protocol will be the way in which a team reacts to how worth it is. And so last week we learned that Dox Akin, the senior midfielder at the University of Virginia, who won a national championship in 2019 and wanted to use an additional year of eligibility in order to play football, had transferred to Villanova to be a part of the Wildcats football team, decided to transfer back and be a part of the Cavaliers team. Ty, you reported this. What more can you add?
Yeah, I mean, this was, you know, I got to say, the most stunning. You know, I think until a move that we'll discuss further, you know, with Bobby Benson going to Maryland. But the Dox news was really shocking to me. I think that there was so much talk during the summer when it was realized by Virginia compliance and the staff that there was a path for Dox Akin to play football in the fall of 2020 and then play lacrosse at Virginia, you know, transfer back as a grad student. And, you know, people were stunned that was legal. And, you know, I think what kind of went under the radar a little bit and tipped off a reaction that I thought was a little bit blown out of proportion. You know, I think people were a little bit misinformed, or maybe I just worded my tweet wrong, but you know, there was not a Villanova football season. I think last time I checked, it was scheduled to start sometime in March, but they currently had like a 6-game football schedule. And just talking to Docs a little bit, you know, on the phone, and I actually caught up with him back in November. I think it really just seemed like, you know, just now in January, looking at everything and things had changed. Virginia has really got a really good sense of what their schedule will be, and they've got several non-conference games. You know, I think he's just a competitor who wants to play a full season as much as possible. I think that it didn't appear like he'd be able to. He kind of said offhand that, you know, what if we have 2 to 3 games at Villanova? I think it's a very difficult situation for him to be in as someone who's returning to football and hoping to give it his all and just only have a few games to play. So, you know, the decision to come back to Virginia was definitely shocking. I know that when I spoke to him, he had just arrived back in Charlottesville the previous night and was pretty fired up to rejoin his teammates and has to do so after a quarantine. I believe he's joining them this week officially. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it, like, it's obviously huge for Virginia. I don't think it, like, you know, pushes them up a spot or two in the preseason poll, but it's definitely going to make things a very interesting ACC that much more interesting to kind of see, you know, Docs back in the fray is one of the top middies in the country, but just shocking across the board. And I'm pumped to watch him play again. And he definitely, you know, changes things. It's going to be an interesting top six for Virginia, you know, and not just, you know, places like Duke, who we've already, you know, called a super team. I think there's going to be a lot of talent in the field in Charlottesville, among others.
Matt, what do you think about this decision to try the waters, test the waters is a better term, to play football and then, you know, decide that spending another season with your lacrosse teammates is the way you want it to go?
Yeah, and it's funny, like, the way Ty put it was absolutely correct in terms of how shocking it was, because when Ty and I were talking about this, like, when we were first kind of getting wind of it, I said to Ty, like, well, Lars said, like, 2 weeks ago to me that any rumors of Docs coming back are not true. So that was, like, how quickly this thing kind of turned in terms of, you know, his wanting to come back to Charlottesville and play lacrosse. But, I mean, you got to give him a lot of credit for pursuing a dream, you know, playing football in college. But you kind of, like, maybe, I think, and I don't want to put, you know, words in Docs's mouth or kind of think for him, but, you know what Virginia lacrosse is. You know the experience you're going to have. I think you can feel pretty confident in their ability to play a more significant schedule and play at a national championship level. So kind of the unknown of, you know, what could happen to this football season in a time when there's been so much unknown for the past year, like, I feel like it probably just, like, deep down is like, you know what, I want to do the thing that just, like, I know is going to be an awesome experience and get the most out of that. So great for him. And Ty, when you were talking about kind of the reaction, one of the things that struck me was just, you know, the Instagram comments kind of, like, criticizing him for coming back seemed just immature and pretty foolish. And we saw that with TD years ago when he transferred from Albany to Yale. And we kind of saw it this week again, because, you know, it was kind of the gut reaction of, you know, bailing on your team or whatever people put it on Instagram. Just foolish. You know, Docs is obviously a great person and we'll give it all wherever he's at. But it's just been interesting in this time of student athlete empowerment that when a student athlete kind of does that, makes a decision for themselves, they're called out on it so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, there nothing said that it was against the rules or anything. You know, sure, a lot of questions, you know, kind of came up, you know, how this was possible. But I do think that people maybe, you know, weren't realizing that, you know, Villanova plays, you know, FCS football and you know, didn't compete during the fall season. So it's not like he played in the fall football season and it's about to play the spring lacrosse season. That's just completely inaccurate. But you know, as I alluded to, I think it was so interesting in November, I was working on a story and just to kind of report that Docs was, you know, continuing on with football and had no plans to play lacrosse and just speaking with him for a while and his football coach. Unfortunately, I never got to get a story out there. I, you know, got COVID, unfortunately, but just talking to the staff, I mean, the head coach of Villanova is talking to me saying, look, we feel like he's athletic enough. You know, he's impressing a wide receiver. The defensive coach is saying, hey, I'd love to use him in some packages as a maybe defensive back or something. And then, you know, every now and then, you know, he'd be out there punting the football after practice. So to think of the potential of him, you know, maybe even contributing on more than one, you know, side of the ball is pretty incredible and speaks volumes for the kind of athlete he is. But there's no doubt that he could help Virginia to, I guess, technically defend their national championship, which sounds crazy to say, but also up his PLL draft stock, because there's no doubt that he's potential to, you know, become a monster in the PLL, you know, when the time comes.
Ty, you already referenced it, but probably the most shocking element of this week was former Johns Hopkins offensive coordinator Bobby Benson replacing JL Reppert, who went on to become the head coach at Holy Cross at the University of Maryland. So Benson, who's been a part of the sport's most tradition-rich rivalry for almost two decades, is now going to be wearing red, white, black, and yellow, competing against the Blue Jays. This was something that developed really fast. Reppert took the job, or at least was announced as having taken the job at Holy Cross on Friday morning, which in and of itself was 2 weeks after we learned that Peter Burke would not be coming back for the 2021 season. And then within 36 hours, Maryland coach John Tillman had added Benson to his staff. Benson, at the time, he had relocated to Atlanta. He was coaching at Pace Academy, a high school down there. He was coaching with the Seven Flames program, club team, and he was contributing to Jamie Monroe's JM3 Sports, kind of working on virtual player coaching, remote coaching. And now he's back in the Division I game. What was your reaction, Ty?
I mean, just stunned. I think that, you know, we all have a relationship with Bobby, and he's someone who, you know, I've certainly enjoyed getting to know over the years, and consider a good friend and love him dearly. He's a, you know, he's an interesting cat, you know, and can always keep you guessing. It really felt like he was happy in Georgia, you know, after making the move late in the summer, and really felt like it was something that, you know, I think he was at peace, and I think, you know, enjoying life, you know, even though he was away from what, you know, he was so used to doing, and that's coaching at the highest level and you know, recruiting all summer. So to kind of see him come, you know, not back in Division I, but at Hopkins, you know, hated arch rival, I think is just was just a wild development. I know it was something we were tracking, you particularly, Terry, you know, from really the moment that we heard that the Reppert could have been on his way out, headed to Holy Cross. I know that Benson was a call, and you know, sure enough, it happened. You know, it felt like it was close to, you know, being able to announce on Saturday. And then I think right around kickoff, you know, before Bills Chiefs on Sunday night, you broke the news, Terry, you know, that Benson would be making the move. And I think it's just a terrific hire for John Tillman in Maryland, for him to come in right away. I believe he's joining them on Tuesday to work with an offense that is just completely loaded. You know, a really, really impressive freshman. You have Bernhardt coming back. You've got some notable grad transfers, you know, guys like DeMaio and Bubba Fairman, you know, returning. I think it's really exciting just to consider, you know, what Benson could help Maryland achieve this spring. And I know that John Tillman, just talking to him since that news trickled out, he's just thrilled. And Benson just kind of, you know, echoed that Benson is one of the smartest people in the game in terms of, you know, what he can do with an offense. And, you know, as I tweeted last night, I think his offensive efficiency numbers, you know, from Patrick, our own Patrick McEwen, were in the top 10 for five of Benson's last six seasons at Hopkins. So, you know, pretty incredible, you know, numbers, pretty incredible stats there. And like I said, just, you know, looking forward to, it'll be very weird seeing Benson in red, but looking forward to seeing him with Maryland, because that's just huge for them.
Matt, between the speed of Holy Cross is naming a successor to Peter Burke, particularly given all the kind of up and down that program's dealt with over the course of the last decade, up through and to Maryland being able to move so quickly with Benson, and then considering that all of this happened in the midst of all the challenges from a higher education, college athletics, and transportation and communication standpoint, what's your kind of overarching thought coming away from this news?
Well, I mean, it's kind of, is it best case scenario for everyone involved? Might be. What comes out of this? You know, Holy Cross got a great hire. And like you said, it's been, you know, up and down for that program. A lot of promising coaches have kind of been there. And it seems like there's always, the departure is always for a weird reason there. And, you know, Coach Reppert is going to do a great job. And, you know, his name has been tossed around for so many head coaching jobs over the past few years. And, you know, that's as good as of a hire as you can get for Holy Cross. And then to think that Maryland, you know, oh my gosh, it's January. Everyone's already got something going on, or, you know, it could have been a really disruptive move that a top assistant from here goes to Maryland. And then there's a whole coaching carousel there. And then Bobby Benson comes in and, you know, gets to coach against his former employer, knows the personnel for Maryland for all the teams in the Big Ten. And obviously those Big Ten games are essentially going to be all that's going to be there for them this year. Just best case scenario for them. The thing that I'm curious about is what, and Ty might know more about this, but, you know, what's Bobby's plan longer term? You know, is this going to be just a 1 or 2 year thing? Is it going to be, you know, a place he wants to stick for several years? But, you know, when we were talking about who's Maryland going to go after, there were so many names of former Maryland Terrapin stars who are in the coaching ranks. And, you know, some of the guys are on the younger side. So maybe, you know, if this is a 1 or 2 year thing, just another year seasoning for that kind of crew of Terps who are rising stars in the coaching land will be good. But also the fact that, you know, there's so many Maryland players in the PLL, and how difficult it would have been for John Tillman to navigate if he had two assistants who were both playing pro lacrosse over the summer, and what that meant for their summer recruiting. So I think this really, you know, helps them out in a significant way. And Bobby coming into a program that has great veterans and offense that's kind of, you know, I think the offense has an identity with Wisnowskis and Bernhardt coming back, and all those veteran pieces. And these are guys who are at the end of their careers and want to win a national championship. It's just a great fit all around.
Yeah, I think what's also interesting is that, you know, it feels like we were just kind of, you know, visiting this topic and thinking about, you know, who could be a good fit, you know, as the next Maryland OC, because there was a time that, you know, we had sources tell us that it really felt like J.L. Reppert was about to become the head coach, the next head coach at VMI, you know, back in what was that, late June, early July. So I think that the same names for the most part were kind of thrown around, the Michael Phippses and Mike Shannon Shucks and Jake Bernhardts. And I mean, there's so many more names I could mention right now, just tossing those names around, you know, in that what if scenario. So, you know, what's obvious is it's tricky timing, you know, and we've said that, you know, for a number of different scenarios that we reported this week. It's very interesting timing and tough, no matter when your season's starting, to leave your team in mid to late January after a really weird year. I mean, some of these guys, you know, probably couldn't even spend the fall, you know, with their team. You know, so to leave your squad at this time would have been, you know, a pretty wild move. But, you know, we've seen a lot of crazy developments these last few months, this last year or so. But, like I said, great hire for Maryland, you know, certainly an interesting one, but, you know, one that I think will have a pretty big impact on Big Ten lacrosse if Benson's there for a while.
And to bring this podcast in for a close, not necessarily in the category of breaking news that we reported, but certainly big news that kind of at this point, as of our recording, summarizes or punctuates a big line of interest that we've seen over the course of the last 2 weeks. The Duke Blue Devils, kind of the consensus number one team heading into the 2021 season, given all of the additions that round out what was already a very good team last year, announced their schedule. It begins with a bang, hosting Denver on Friday, February 5th at 3 p.m. in Durham, part of a Pioneers two-game East Coast stretch through Carolina, in which they play the Tar Heels on that following Sunday. Matt, you've kind of been taking the lead on getting each of these schedules posted on InsideLacrosse.com. What do you describe the through lines that you've seen in these schedules, and what do you take away from Duke's schedule that's particularly meaningful or newsworthy?
Yeah, Terry, it's been interesting. You know, kind of like we kicked off this podcast of like months ago, we were expecting like an April start for the season or something. And now we're looking at the end of January for the season to start. But, you know, when it comes down to it, the lack of non-conference games, you know, I think maybe for some conferences, it's a few more than we thought. But for the bulk of the conferences, there's either none or, you know, just one or two that they're able to squeeze in. So having those games kind of at the beginning of your schedule, then moving into this conference play where you kind of want to be more in this bubble of, you know, really protective of your conference and making sure that those conference games happen. And then maybe scheduling that, you know, one out of conference game at the end of the year that, you know, is kind of a little bit misleading. So I want to just kind of like, I was a little worried that I was going to be Mr. Negativity on this podcast. I actually was talking to a coach earlier who said he's going to grade me on how negative I am in this, but I think everyone should still read all of these schedules with a grain of salt. The testing protocols, you know, I talked to one coach who said that, you know, once they start traveling, you know, if there's a positive, that means, you know, 10 to 14 days of quarantines or 10 to 14 days, everything needs to shut down. So like that happens twice to a team in the span of a season. That's a pretty significant chunk of the schedule that's just gone or has to be made up or has to be done some other way. So I just want people to keep that in mind. You know, everything that's kind of out there is definitely subject to change. That last week of the season, you see a lot of teams scheduling that May 1st and May 2nd. I'd really expect a lot of those games to be drastically different. You know, the Patriot League as a prime example, they kind of left that week open with the intention of making up any Patriot League games, but coaches are now scheduling that against out of conference opponents. So, hey, if we get through our season unscathed, you know, we'll have this big end of the year matchup that we can go off of. So take all these with a grain of salt, but, you know, definitely that like format wise, it's great to see that, you know, they're getting some good out of conference games early. That first weekend of February in the Triangle is just awesome. You know, with Robert Morris playing those two good games against North Carolina and Duke against Denver and then Duke against Robert Morris. That's an awesome weekend of lacrosse, and we're getting it in just a matter of days now. So we should really, really be thankful for that. You know, I hope that those teams that are playing early, it doesn't hurt them in terms of the conference stuff that's coming, you know, whether it's later in February or into March. Then, you know, once we get into March, it's going to be all about conference and protecting those conference games and making sure you get all of them in, making sure that, you know, your team is following the protocols and really as much as talent is going to be the determining factor of this year. And obviously we all think that Duke is the most talented team. It's a test of will. It's a test of who can stay the healthiest, who can kind of deal with the mental part of this game this year. And I think the schedule is kind of reflective of that.
Ty, I know that we're still hopeful but uncertain as to our ability to attend games in person, but it sounds like we're going to be able to watch Friday afternoon lacrosse on February 5th on ESPNU or the ACC Network. Still haven't learned that officially yet, but our commentators have indicated that that type of news might be forthcoming. How do you describe your excitement when you think about what that means?
I'm just having daydreams of happy hour lacrosse, you know, returning. I think, you know, it really has, and obviously we had the PLL this past summer, and that was amazing. But just to consider, you know, it's been a long time since we've watched, you know, college lacrosse, and just to kind of fill that void and be so close to it, I can't wait for that weekend of lacrosse, and you know, assuming those will be broadcasted and you know, widely watched. So it's just still, you know, pretty surreal and pinching myself and knocking on wood at the same time, you know, hoping that we can, you know, make this happen. And just thinking immediately, you know, to that weekend, the Denver will have, you know, Carolina and Duke. And then 2 weeks later, you know, hoping that we can actually make it out there to Towson, you know, when Duke heads up there and plays the Tigers on Saturday, February 20th. But just exciting to consider. You know, we're getting there, and you know, just can't believe it. I think it's just if you can't tell, just still in shock that it's almost here.
Terry, one thing with the broadcast schedule, that's like a big question mark I'm really, really curious about, is just, you know, where these games are going to be broadcasted, what the, you know, the TV schedule is going to look like. From my understanding, you know, so Big Ten, a lot of those schools moved fall athletics to spring. So there's going to be a lot of competition for fields, a lot of competition for broadcasts and stuff. It's my understanding that the Big Ten network contractually has to air lacrosse games. I'm not sure the number of which, but definitely look forward to some of those games being on there. But I'm hopeful that, you know, whatever camera equipment someone needs to drag to a field somewhere on these campuses, I hope that they get it. You know, it might be a little bit of a little rough in some schools. Maybe, you know, I'm hopeful that at the D2, D3 levels as well, you know, we're able to get the live streams and stuff like that, but hope as much access as possible to these games, because I think everyone, Ty, I echo what you're saying. We're just dying to watch some college lacrosse.
I think we don't watch anything. Yeah. I mean, we don't watch any game. You know, surely do not discriminate at, you know, any level. I'll watch, you know, I'll watch any lacrosse game that's on, I'm sure. You know, a lot of tabs will be open on the weekends, and you know, I think it's even gotten maybe, you know, pondering a 2 TV setup. I think might be worthy of that this spring, but just can't wait, and you know, still hopeful, and as we've alluded to a couple of times, I think just, you know, I'm really, you know, hoping these teams and these programs can stay disciplined. You know, and wear their masks and just be smart and show that common sense and commitment to, you know, something that's bigger than themselves. I think, you know, I think just to have everyone out there playing a medicine game is going to be something that, will be hard to stop smiling at. So just hope we can pull it off and have a full season as much as possible.
Well, that is a great place to leave it. If you like what you heard, leave a rating and review. Tell a friend. Make sure to check out InsideLacrosse.com. We are adding college team schedules to our scoreboard every single day, so you'll be able to check out the calendar feature that gives you all divisions, men's and women's NCAA lacrosse schedules as they are announced. And check back as we will continue with our 2021 season rollout content as games get closer. And before you know it, we are going to be going with our in-season content calendar. Couldn't be more excited about it, as these guys mentioned. And then the last thing that I will say is, if you're feeling a little bit of generosity, the GoFundMe activity supporting Chris Bocklet as he recovers from a brain injury, and Colin Clive as he continues to battle brain cancer in the wake of his parents' death, has been unbelievable. Clive's GoFundMe is over $688,000 raised. Bocklet's is at $240,000 raised. So if you've got a little bit of extra cash and you want to support the lacrosse community, there is almost no better way to do it than those two GoFundMes. So in lieu of a rating, how about we ask for a $5 donation to one of those GoFundMes? And we'll be back later in the week with more Inside Lacrosse Podcasts.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.